Thank you. And one big issue that came up this last year was the change in the city's water treatment system. In fact, that's a reason why three of you decided to run for city council. And what are your thoughts on that change? And this time we will start with Dave Kiefer.
You waited till I had water in my mouth. The chloramine situation is a tough one, and partly this is another reason why I got involved. Not specifically that reason, but the idea that, you know, we need to be looking down the road as to what the real answers are. And it's been my impression, you know, watching from the other local government, watching how the feds operate. No matter what we try to do to chloramine the water or chemicalize it or make it better, it just doesn't seem to work. They change their standards every 4 or 5 years. It just keeps happening. I actually spoke in public at a council meeting about 15 years ago saying they should just go to the filtration plant. And at that time, oh, it's too expensive. Well, now we've spent almost nearly as much on chloramine as we would have spent on the filtration plant. Another idea that's been tossed out that I find interesting is apparently about 30 or 40 years ago, there was a city study to determine the best location to actually do the water tap for the water system. And that may be worth going back and looking at again, because maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe we need it deeper in Ketchikan Lakes. Maybe we need it somewhere else. Maybe we just need, you know, I don't want to see us go down the road of absolutely having to build a $40 million filtration plant. So if there is another option, I'd like to hear it. I just don't think whatever chemical solution we come up with is going to stand the test of time.
And Kevin Staples.
Oh, thank you. The chloramine issue is obviously a big deal. And when they first started looking into it, I was like, wait a minute, hold on. What's going on here? This just smells of good money after bad. And yes, chloramine is one of the older ways of I wouldn't say purifying. It's definitely not purifying potable water. It's adding a chemical to meet an EPA standard. And when we decided to go the cheapest route possible, but yet we were giving a warning out to everybody saying, oh, by the way, if you have kidney issues or if you have pets or for gosh sakes, if you have fish, don't put this in the water. It's going to kill them. And that kind of raises some red flags. And then the more you start looking into it, NBC just did an article recently on Washington, D.C., and they replaced a bunch of their pipes, their old lead pipes. In those pipes, when they added the chloramine, their lead parts per million skyrocketed. And this raised some serious red flags in me. Mark Osborne actually sent me an article today, and to say that it's not affecting people, this is kind of a fallacy because it is affecting people. In Florida, there was a I believe it was Tampa, had to shut their water down, their potable water system down, because there was amoebas found, it brain-eating amoebas that were found in the water supply. These are all well documented. And here we have the Rain City capital of the world. We have potable water coming out of our ears. And to say that we can add a chemical that nobody likes, and really getting back down to the matter, if it was what everybody wanted, that's fine. But the city council gave us a list of requirements to set it to a vote, and we met those. We met them above and beyond. And then we were laughed at, literally, and then told you can't vote on it. And when you do that, it makes you look like an idiot in front of everybody. And that's just not the way to go. So we need to allow the citizens to ask or to be asked, what do you want to do with your water? To be told by the city council that we know what's best for you, even though it's adding chemicals, is the wrong way to go about this. When you're talking about adding something to the water, I think the city council or the citizens deserve the right to speak up about that. Now, with filtration, like Dave said, you're doing nothing but offering crystal clear, beautiful rainwater to the people. You're taking out all of the bad stuff. You're taking all the stuff out that causes cancer. Instead of adding it, you're making nothing but pure, nice drinking water to the people. And I think that's what we need to look at. What if the citizens really want chloramine, by all means, ask them.
Dick Coos?
It's kind of hard to know where to start with this right here. I'm not too sure, and this is not a defense, whether I was on the council when this all started. But I will say one thing. The council, to a person, listened to these folks on the water. Because I'm one that I don't really care about the feds. They put rules on us that I don't care for. But in this case here, the science that we were given, we felt stood up to the test, and so we went the way we did. And you know, it's really the bottom line. We've had a $6 or $8 million plant there that was started, and you continue through it. And maybe we need to go to filtration. Maybe we don't. Maybe we need to do what Don Young said: just ignore the feds, because sometimes they're the dictator. But anyway, we have what we have, and we need to work forward to see if we can keep it as clean as we can and without additional type cost and so forth. Now, where that goes is going to be up to the city council, and hopefully there's a number of us sitting there that looks at the facts and looks at the cost, and because it all comes down to all of those facts and cost, and people are concerned about cost. We may filter it, and feds will say, hey, you got to do something else. We don't know what they're going to do to us, but we've got to be able to defend what we do and try to keep them as low-key as we can.
And Ed Plute?
Well, the water we have right now, the way they got it set up, I can hardly drink this water, and I notice a difference in it. No matter, it's to me, it's just a dangerous thing around everything. However, there was some study and research done that Amanda showed me as well, but also Amanda talked about a standpipe along with Bob Bocock, I believe it was, and a standpipe in our system would eliminate a lot of the contaminants in it. But also, there's a corporation called TIGG System out of Pennsylvania that would service two filtration systems up here, and it'd be EPA approved, and it costs about 60% less than what the city plans on spending as far as money goes. And they're EPA approved, and they will be installed at that same cost. And so that's my take on that situation, because I'm tired of spending money and throwing it in a bucket of water and throw it overboard. This has got to be put under control. Thank you.
And Amanda Mitchell.
Hi. Well, I guess I would have a lot to say about this issue, but I will try to kind of sum it up. I'm not happy with the chloramine in the system, obviously, and I had brought it up. I am just a stay-at-home mom. I don't want to just say just, because this is like my passion. I love my babies. But I did the study, and I'm not a council person. I took my time and I took my money in my effort to educate the community about this issue, and it was my research. I didn't need to spend money on an expert to let me to go and research the subject. And what I was hearing, and I do appreciate it, I'm sure the council really thought they were doing its best, and this is what they were told. And I honestly believe that this is what they were told. But at what point do you start questioning the company that you're doing with business with? And instead of questioning the company and the science they get, they kept handing more and more money and fighting the citizens of the town instead of having our questions answered. And when Bob Bocock, being an expert in the water industry, and also Aaron Brockovich, as lead environmental investigator, he came up here. They refused to put him on their agenda, but yet they flew CH2M Hill, their guy, up here to answer our questions, and they didn't even answer the questions. They went roundabout. Well, is the UV system in the chlorine backwards? Well, no, in some places they can do this. No, they didn't answer the question, and most people do know it's basic science. You run chlorine through sunlight, it breaks down. And so that was some of the issues. It's just... It comes back to that's the reason why I'm running for council. It's another one of those things is why wasn't there questions asked. And I want to go back to is that The question was asked about infrastructure, and this has a lot to do with infrastructure because we're not just talking about sewer. We're also talking about the water. And they knew it was going to cause damage to pipes, and they knew it was going to cause damage to the rubber. And yet this was not an issue to them. You know what the city did is they went out and bought their own parts so they can have chloramine-resistant parts, while we as household and owners and taxpayers have to replace the parts in our own thing. And so we're talking about if we don't approve this bond, we're kicking the can down the road. But yet here, not only are we willing to damage all our own infrastructure, we're kicking the can down the road until we need a filtration system. And so this, I mean, there's so many things that in here, I feel like the whole subject, it wasn't researched even more. And when you go back and, you know, what did CH2M Hill, what options did they ever give us? It was about ammonia. It wasn't, let's do this, let's do that. They were selling us a product. That's all they were doing, selling us a product. And I think it may be at this time to start looking at other options. So, like, corresponding with Bob Bocock, we were talking about some of our current situation. What can we do now that we have it? It's not working. You know, people aren't happy. What could we do that would save us money, or how we can do it? Because we're told that we have to have this huge filtration system. It's going to cost us millions of dollars, like everything in Ketchikan. It's like our whole roads are paved with gold. But over here by our UV system, and when he was driving through the town, he said that, and he showed at his meeting, that we would be able to put up some of the smaller filtration plants. He says we don't need the Cadillac filtration system. We just need some to remove some of those organics. And then where they stuck the ammonia plant up there, right in front of the reservoirs, where we can move it and put the chlorine there, get rid of the ammonia, put the chlorine and inject it after we filter UV, and then put the ammonia after. So then our byproducts would go down, because now we're not having to add 2 points for chlorine. That's the reason why we need 2 points for chlorine, and they're looking at it, is because it dissipates. And we have to keep those level up. I just think that there's more things to look at, and we're still not getting the full story. And I want to be that council member that goes in there and asks those tough questions, like, why isn't, I am not afraid to research, you know, my own. I don't need an expert to keep telling me this is what you should know. You know, I ask questions. So.
Thank you. And we do have a caller on the line. It's Joss. Joss, are you there? Oh, we have lost Joss, so we'll go ahead with the next question. The city of Ketchikan raised sales taxes this year. Was that the right choice, and why or why not? And this time we'll start with Dick Coos.
Wow, the right choice. There had to be a choice made. The city did a few things that, regardless of what you think, there's too many reserves, that becomes a debatable point, but we built a library, we built a fire station, and we've got some infrastructure there, and the income was not meeting the needs. The original plan on that by some of the folks was we were going to have a 1% increase in sales tax, and some of us managed to get it back to half. And so to me right now, that was probably the right choice at this point in time, and I'll guarantee if you're sitting on this council and this come this fall, you're going to get hit with it again by management. They're going to want something out of us. And I resist. I won't say I won't go for it, but it's going to have to be a lot of questions answered as to why we need to do it and why we can't use some more reserves and why we can't reduce what we're spending. But, yep, at that time, a sales tax increase was the right choice.
Dave Kiefer?
Sales tax increases, millage rate increases, bond elections, these all have to be the last choice. I've been in government to know long enough that when there's a problem, staff will usually come and say, well, we need to boost this. We need to boost income. And yes, we are going to cut. We need to boost income. I am not convinced that the sales tax increase was a good idea. I guess the reason I'm not convinced of that, and Mr. Coos did allude to this a little before, staff likes to carry as large a reserve as possible. There was a time 4 or 5 years ago, the city reserves and KPU reserves were up in four or five times even what the bond councils and others recommended them to carry, and the borough at times too. One of the great joys on the assembly is the staff always presents us with a wonderfully large reserve, and we always figure out a way to pare that down so that we're not taking too much of the taxpayers' dollars and just sitting on them. And I guess I'm not convinced the six and a half increase was the right thing to do, and certainly not in the long term, because we are reaching a point now where our sales taxes are getting fairly high.
And just to clarify, it was an increase to 6.5.
Right.
Not a full six and a half.
Yes, that's right. Exactly. Increase from 6 to 6.5.
Thank you. And Kevin Staples.
Actually, I have to say this is probably one of the worst decisions that's been made since I've been here. Next to chloramine, it was probably one of the worst decisions that was made. You're given a budget. And as a household, we all know what our budget is. Your annual salary is your budget. It's what you have to work with. If you can't afford that nice, shiny new boat or that nice, shiny new car, you don't go out and buy or ask for another credit card. It's not the responsible thing to do. It's what a lot of us do, but it's not the responsible thing to do. And after a while, when you start going into the bank and you keep getting more and more credit cards, eventually you realize you're in over your head big time. And Ketchikan is quickly getting to that point. When you have to go and ask the people for a bond that's $5.2 million over what you hopefully project the water and sewer pipes to cost, that's a serious problem. And when they raised the sales tax, we were told that, oh, that's just going to be extra. Well, what's that extra being used for? Is it being used for the two museums? These are questions that aren't being answered. We keep going asking, why are you raising our sales tax? Why are you raising our mill rate? And when you don't raise the mill rate, you increase our property values. I've heard so many people say that they've increased my property value well above what I can actually possibly think to get for the cost of my home. Well, for lack of a better term, I'm that's shenanigans. You're robbing Peter to pay Paul. And let's get right down to it. It's getting to the point when you can't afford to live in Ketchikan. You're raising the sales tax so incredibly high. And actually, we've heard people on the city council start talking about senior citizens having to pay sales tax too. And that's that. If you mention that with a straight face, you should be asked to leave the city council, because our senior citizens are what built this town. And you can't sit here with a straight face and say you want to increase the sales tax again and then sit there and tell me you want to not have the senior citizens not pay. There are other ways. We have a budget. Start living within the budget or stop raising our taxes.
Amanda Mitchell?
Yeah, I, again, want to say I'm sure that the city council thought they were doing, and what I would like to see is if the city council actually thought it was a management problem and how far that they dug into it, or if they felt it was more city council, because from the sounds of it's the information given, and obviously they can't research every single subject that's put in front of them. I love researching, and it's my thing, but it's very hard to research everything that comes in front of them. So that's something that probably needs to be looked into. But I don't think the sales tax, it's a bad idea. And I know that we all know somebody that's struggling in this town. And how many families have to live together, more than one family, or how many friends are helping out friends? And sales tax might seem not very big, but everybody's paying for it, and it brings down our quality of life locally, and it does make it harder for us. And we just know the bonds, obviously we have the bonds, and we obviously have, it's like credit card debt, and we're going to have to treat it like a hot potato. We want to get rid of it as fast as possible, instead of just drawing it out for 30 years or anything. We need to get rid of the debt, and I'm sure that they're managing within a budget, but then we'll come back to, what was it? It was a couple weeks after they passed all the increase in the taxes that they magically had money for a museum. wasn't that was one of the things that they were talking about, is that, hey, well, we have some funds to go do something else. And maybe it's because our priorities are still mixed up. And maybe that's what we need to figure out. Who's making these priorities? Is it city council? Is it the citizens? Or is it management? So.
And Ed Plute.
Okay. Well, for starters, the fire department went $5 million plus over. And then you've got the library went $5 million plus over. Now, if you add up the bonds to that, that's $22 million for both these projects, which are highly overinflated. We're only going to end up paying $35 million back to the system for these mistakes that are made. This money is completely mismanaged, and I think it's time that we call them in. And, you know, I ask myself, you go for another sales tax. Well, if you look at the books, we got plenty of money in reserve. I looked at the books the other day, and they're asking for a bond issue. We have the money. That's where they find it. It's in there. And we got so many different funds out there as far as the ports and harbor funds, everything else. There's so many funds that money keeps sliding around and nobody seems to know where it's at. But when a project goes over $5 million, gee, they magically find it. Well, this has got to come to a stop, and we need a one budget system where we know where this money really truly goes. Thank you.
Thank you. And we do have a caller on the line. George, are you there? George, are you there?
Thank you. And we do have a caller on the line. George, are you there?
Hello?
Hello?
George, can you turn your radio down, please? We can hear it in the background.
Oh, all right.
George?
Hello?
Thank you. Go ahead with your question.
I'd like to know how available the candidates are going to be via telephone. I know present candidates, present incumbents, are very available. I also know that members that are newly running have a very secretive, there's no telephone numbers listed for them, and I just wondered if going into public life they're aware they're going to have to make themselves more available to their constituents with through a telephone system, not just some kind of another system. That's the standard expectation. And I know the people that are presently or have held office are very available, but there's three new candidates, and I know that the records of some of them for having available telephones are very public, very closely held. It's impossible to contact them person to person.
Okay, thank you, George. We'll have them answer the question. And basically, it's accessibility. How will you make sure that the constituents can reach you if they have a question or concern? This time, we will start with Kevin Staples.
Hi. Yeah, thanks. Well, let's see. I'd be glad to give out my phone number. Just please don't drunk dial me. 3 a.m. phone calls don't make me very happy. Actually, I just have a cell phone number. And did I just drop off? Okay, good. I just have a cell phone number. I don't have a landline, so that's the only reason why my phone's not in the phone book. But that's easily remediable. And if I'm a public servant, by all means, I'm available 24/7. That's without a doubt. And I have email, I have Facebook, I have cell phone. Call me. I'll listen.
And Dave Kiefer.
Well, George, you've never had trouble getting a hold of me in the past, so I'm sure you'll always be able to. Yeah, it is important, and one of the things I did learn as certainly in my time on the assembly is that it's not just being able to reach out and touch you when you're on the phone. It's when you're standing at the grocery line, it's when you're waiting at the pool. It's you are as a public official. You are, I wouldn't quite say 24/7 because even I try to take a couple hours off,
yeah.
But but yeah, you are. That's part of your job. That's a big part of your job, and certainly, I think all the members of the council from here on out have to be as available as they possibly can.
And Amanda Mitchell.
Yeah, same thing. I would actually probably even get a separate phone because I have kids, and you know what? They will answer it and hang up on you, so we'll have, like, separate phones. But the same thing doing the water issue is very available. We split the jobs because it grew to be a larger group, so I would think that, yes, as a public servant, even if not a public servant, I'm still willing to help our community even with problems that come around. And I've been here for several months helping out with people, so yes.
Great. Ed Plute?
Yes. For one, I've been writing articles in Cent News and in the newspaper and regular paper for several years now. And I consistently put my phone numbers in there. You can call me anytime, day or night. I'm always answering the phone. I'm always on my computer. You can email me. And that is all over out there. And you can find my, if you Google me, you can find my phone numbers, my email addresses, and you shouldn't have any trouble contacting me, which when people do, I do talk to them immediately about almost any issue they wish. Thank you.
And Dick Coos.
It's always been the policy that the phones work, and if you call me, leave a message. If I'm not there, I'll call you back, and I don't think anybody can complain that they've never been called back. So you got to be there, and that's kind of been the way I've been for probably the last 40 or 50 years, because in my previous life, I was available on the phone because I was a public servant.
Okay, thank you. And I believe, I haven't checked it recently, but I believe that sitting council members also have their phone numbers published on the city's mm-hmm. website.
Yes, they do, yeah.
So that would be another way to find them if somebody's not listed. And the next question I have on my list is going back to budget issues. What parts of the city budget are expendable? What would you cut? And this time we'll start with Ed Plute.
Okay, the city budget itself, there's several places where they can start cutting it. First of all, start looking at these bids that actually go out there to different contractors, because I know there's a favorite well-known bidder, and he's a favorite for the city and several others. But, you know, I think it's time we start looking at some outside interest on bids, because these bids and these contracts, at the price they're going, I've been in construction before, and I sit there and just got to laugh at a lot of these projects at the cost of them. And some of these projects are just way, way out of bounds, and they need to start looking at these bid processes. And also the purchasing of some of the equipment and some of these little signs that the city buys and puts in place. Some of them are only worth $2,000 or $3,000, which you can obviously see, but they're getting charged $10,000. We need to start micromanaging this budget and start taking a closer look, and take the budget and put it to one system instead of 40 or 50 different little budgets out there for different funds. And this, once it is done, then you can actually see where your money truly goes, and we can save a lot of money this way. Thank you.
Thank you. And Kevin Staples.
Well, thank you. First of all, I was at the city council meeting, not the last time. I was actually out of town, but the time before that. And we voted it, again, unanimously, $20,000 for advertisement to vote on Props 1 and 2 for the sewer and water pipes. That's $20,000. KRBD, how much do you charge for advertisements?
That's not my department.
Okay. I guarantee you it wasn't $10,000. And so we've got a newspaper. We have a couple radio stations, KPU, which, by the way, City Council owns, the city owns, and a couple radio stations. So why did that cost $20,000 of your tax money? Is that part of the bond that we're voting for? This is ridiculous. Nobody stopped and said, why? It doesn't cost $20,000 to run a couple ads. I've seen the ad in the local paper. It's not that big. And on Cent News, it wasn't that big. It did not cost $20,000. That's a new car. Okay, so to say what parts of the city budget are you going to cut, why don't we start from the top down? We have some people on the city council who make more than senators, congressmen, and the United States president. That needs to become public knowledge. It needs to be called out. It needs to be made more visible. And I don't know if necessarily what I'm going to say I'm going to cut, and I probably just stepped right out there. I'm going to touch the third rail now. But we need to actually ask questions. And instead of just arbitrarily sticking your hand up and saying yes to every little thing, ask why. Why did it cost $20,000 to advertise on Props 1 and 2? That was a serious question that nobody asked. Instead, everybody just arbitrarily said yes.
And I believe you may have misspoke. You said those on the city council who make more than, I think you.
You're absolutely right.
Administrators?
Thank you very much.
Okay, just wanted to.
No, he was going to get a run.
I'm sorry. I did misspeak. Right. No, but there's people that work for the city that make more than the United States president, and that's shenanigans once again. Not on the city council, though.
Okay. Thank you. And Dave Kiefer.
I think it's always somewhat foolish to answer a question like that directly and say, I'm going to cut blah, 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 because then you get in and you discover there's a reason why you're not going to cut that blah, blah, blah. And right. It might even be a really good reason.
Actually, I agree totally.
What I think is important, and they mentioned the idea of the bidding process, and the whole capital projects process is an interesting one. I'm not sure how far down the city, down the river the city is in this one, but the borough, when I joined the assembly 11 years ago, was right up to its neck in one of the worst public projects that had ever happened, the Schoenbar remodel that ended up costing $20-odd million on a $6 million remodel, because every decision that had been made up to that point was, let's figure out a way to cut money. Let's stop the project. Let's do this. Let's throw things at the wall. Since then, we have yet to hire a low bidder since then for a major project, because we came up with another process where you basically hire a company and say, look, this is a $10 million project. That's what it's going to cost. That's all you're going to get. And virtually every project since then the borough's done has come in either on time, relatively under budget. You know, we've not had that mistake again, because sometimes simply saying, we're going to go with the low bidder no matter what, costs you a fortune in the long run. And I think part of that is taking that approach, and I think the city has started to do that in some of their projects. But I would certainly like to carry that through from the borough standpoint, take that advice with me to the city and say, okay, what do these projects cost? You know, what's a good number? And you're right. Sometimes in terms of your consultants may not always be helping you, as the city found out with their consultants for Whitman and those projects recently. You know, things were just, you know, things were not where they were supposed to be. So you've got to try to get the best information and decide, okay, this is a reasonable cost. This is what we're going to spend. We're not going to go over that. And then let the project go and have hopefully it come. Yeah, actually not hopefully. It does generally come in where it's supposed to.
Thank you. And Dick Coos?
Yeah, to say exactly what you might cut is right now is not the right time, but you need to look at the budget, and like somebody said, you need to nitpick at the death. And I've been pretty good at that, not only from the city council, but when I was on the borough assembly and when I worked for the Forest Service, why people always put stuff in there that was I thought was pie in the sky, and so you try to get rid of it, but it still takes four hands to get rid of it. The other thing you really need to look at is as it goes along, where's it coming from? Different departments are different, and you just got to look at the whole thing. It's not an easy thing to chase, but I fully agree that we need to look at reducing the budget every year and looking at what the revenues are going to be, and that's where the budget is revenues versus budget. And what it is you believe that the public is looking for to come from that budget to meet the future needs of the community. Keep it going.
Thank you. And Amanda Mitchell.
All right. Well, I'd like to cut the taxes, but we know that's probably not going to happen. So some ideas is the bids. One thing I would start doing is I think you can't just say you're going to cut. Even with my own budget, if I'm going home and I'm thinking, well, I need to cut some things, you know, you have to have the flexibility to know that you need some. Maybe I won't go and buy the steak this week. I might eat Top Ramen tomorrow, you know, that sort of stuff. You can budget. Obviously, you don't want to make that a every time thing and saying, hey, I'm going to cut this, is you're making it permanent. I think maybe if we can have more flexibility in departments, I don't know if that's something to be thought of. Contracts that actually put us in a dependency upon a company, there's more of a likelihood, even if let's say, I've heard of some examples of buying parts, and then you buy one thing. And, you know, a lot of companies do make their products, so you can't use anybody but their product with it. And so it's automatically putting it in a monopoly. Some of these contracts, as you notice, that coming up on I think it's in the city council this week, is that they're going to have exemptions and looking at exemptions. And some of these are probably even necessary, but those are some of the things that probably should be looked at before we even start a contract. I've had people call me about and write emails about, hey, did you notice the library lights are on at midnight? What is that about? So maybe cutting some of the costs by looking at reducing even at the smaller end. And then we have this one-sided education to our city. So like with the water issue, we educate the town on the side that we want them to see, not on both sides so we can all make it. I think a lot of people were pretty frustrated and the education is not working out as what maybe the city is planning. That's including this proposition or the bonds that are coming up. There was the Stanford University. I don't know if many people, and I can send it. You can email me. But Stanford University actually published in their own magazine about the hydro dam. They said it must be made out of gold. It is one of the most expensive in the world. So maybe holding some contractors accountable, and you know, they're bonded for a reason. Maybe we need to start looking in to when, hey, they don't hold to their bargain, they need to. And maybe we need to start thinking about, hey, when we make these contracts and if we're going to go and this is going to cost us, we need to have more flexibility. I know this is borough side, like with the bus barn, there were some things with the property. And if you notice, the contractor wrote up their own contract. And I've heard some other rumors that other people are writing up their own contracts. How is that ever in our own best interest in this town? You don't let them have all the power, and that is not how you negotiate. So that's something else. I mean, I would look, what about the CH2M Hill? They did the Citizens Initiative. They paid money to fight against us on that. The same with the $100,000 that they initiated. They had to pay more money. What about the studies that we keep doing all these studies? Where did the study put us for CHM2 Hill for the water issue? How many of these studies, we hire professionals to come in here and give them a word, and they should already know this. They shouldn't have to study our town to tell us what their expertise should already be. They're already, that's like getting double paid for their job. So that's some of the stuff I would look at. I don't know. There's more too. I mean, I would think that there's other things too. I just think it's brainstorming with our town, but I guess that's what I would start off with.
Thank you.
One quick comment.
Dick wanted
and
to respond.
Anybody that may get on the council, just kind of a word that I try to do is before a contract is ever put out for contract, look at the specs, because there's always stuff in those specs that we may not want. And that, once again, is really tough to get staff to pull something out of the specs. So look at the specs before you do it.
It's okay. Go ahead. You know, even if I got on council, I think that, Dick, that you have a lot of good ideas. And I would hope that even some people, even if we, you know, the people that are new to it got in there, I would hope that we could work together, because you guys still have a lot of knowledge of what's going around. But us bringing some new ideas to the plate might actually help too.
Okay. And we do have a caller on the line. It is Mark. Mark, are you there?
Hi. My question is whether we really need a city-owned cell phone company, because doesn't really make a lot of sense to me to have one. I'm a huge nerd, and I would never buy a KPU cell phone.
All right. Thank you, Mark. And this time we will start with Amanda Mitchell.
This is news to me. I didn't even know that we were going to. I'll be honest, I don't use KPU, and we actually don't have television in our house in the sense we buy everything in advance. We like the flexibility and watching TV shows all in once, I guess. But yeah, you know, that would be something I'm looking into. You know, you might even bring this to the plate that you don't like it, but other people actually might like it. There might be more out there than not. I would want to look at it in the cost and what it was. You know, there's a lot of questions. I have people asking about KPU anyway and how the budget is working. So, and I'm sure I really can't answer. I can't say one thing or the other on it, but I would definitely look into it. How's that?
And Ed Plute.
Yeah, KPU has a lot of fingers out there. I agree with that. As far as KPU, public utilities owning so many different branches of everything else they own, that kind of concerns me a lot, because they can pretty much monopolize the prices on everything they got. And that's a great concern. So that also needs to be micromanaged. Thank you.
And Dave Kiefer?
KPU Telecom is an interesting beast, as we all know, and it'll be probably one of the biggest challenges for any of us who are getting on the assembly. I'm sorry, on the council, Freudian slip. And even for long-time council members, trying to figure out exactly, you always say follow the money, and that's one of the biggest challenges, is following the money at KPU, because so much of what they talk about at the meetings does not necessarily make sense to the layperson. I'm still kind of curious, because at one point I understood it to be that the telecom was trying to reach out and expand and add all these things to make it more palatable for an outside company to come in and buy it. And that was the idea 4 or 5 years ago. Well, that effort failed, and so I'm kind of fascinated why they're still looking at expanding telecom. And I'd be very curious. I think I would, on the council, I would ask some pretty serious questions about any expansion plans that the telecom had at this point.
Thank you. And Kevin Staples.
Thank you. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate the question. Actually, there's a lot of things that I don't really understand about a city-owned utility company like this, and especially in this regard. We have so many things that just don't really make a lot of sense. Thank you. We've got water bottles flying across the room. We've got a television, and I mean, a lot of these things are I just don't understand about. And to be honest, I'd have to educate myself pretty quickly. But cell phone, I mean, we've got GCI, we've got ACS, we've got AT&T. Do we really want to compete with three other companies? I don't know. I'd really have to look into that.
And Dick Coos.
How much history do you really want to know? As a lot of people know, the city has tried to sell KPU telephone at least once, and if the vote failed, and we were making money. It was supplementing and subsidizing the water system. That vote failed, and then since then the plan had been to just keep us so that we don't just fall apart. And part of that's been bringing in TV, and then I guess and then the internet came into it, and we were paying quite a price for using GCI's internet system. And this is going to be really brief as I can be. But then competition is still there, and KPU Telecom is still making money. They're subsidizing water. So the plan was brought forth by staff, by an outside contractor that specializes in, quote, telecommunications. And it was proposed basically a cell phone system, and it will be Verizon. And I hope that's public knowledge. Otherwise, I'm disclosing something that I shouldn't have. So we'll have Verizon. We've got it on the island now, and I think you've got data. Cell phone service supposedly sometime in the spring. Once again, the whole idea is supplement the budget so that we can bring this to us. I know that staff knows I've been skeptical, but the numbers are there, so I hope the numbers pan out and that we're successful. And if it is, then maybe we don't want to sell it. But if it's not, then we got to do something because we can't afford to lose money. But anyway, they say the numbers there. They say it's progressing the way it should. And, yep, we're going to be in the cell phone business. And, Mark, we needed all these conversations before and people looking at, once again, the details in the contract, which were not public, which bothers the devil out of me. But when you're dealing with another big company, they keep things to their chest. But anyway, it's off and going, and it looks like it's working, and we're making more money at it. So maybe we can keep the water rates down by telephone services. So anyway, that's a little bit of the history.
Thank you. You kept it pretty brief.
Okay.
Overall, so that was good. Regarding the water and wastewater bonds, it's been mentioned a few times this evening, and they will be on the city ballot next week. The city has quite a bit of bond debt already. Can we handle more? And on the flip side of that, can we afford to not fix this infrastructure? And this time we will start with Dave Kiefer.
We are getting to the point where between the borough and the city, you know, the bonded indebtedness of the community is approaching $200 million. And that worries me because that's a cost that's going to have to be paid eventually. That said, we have some serious infrastructure problems right now. I'd be curious to see how much we could cover through the reserves of both the bond proposals. But as a city resident, I'm going to vote yes at this point simply because I don't see any other option out of it right now.
Thank you. Kevin Staples.
Well, thank you. Actually, I have to say, if as a citizen, when you increased our sales tax, you told us that was going to be extra money. And now, less than a year later, maybe even less than 6 months later, you're now telling me you want $10 million. And looking at the city budget, the total cost of the project is $17.4 million. You were going to the state and asking for, $12.1 million. And that's a $5.2 million over extra out of that $10 million. The thing of it is, we've known this water, or the water in our sewer pipes, have been an issue for a long, long, long time. And every time we've done a beautification project, we've done the fire hall, the library, these are all great. And trust me, I love the look of the fire hall. It looks great. I use the library. And all of these things are really nice to have. But I use the analogy in the newspaper today, the article that came out today. If Daddy went out and bought you a brand new Ferrari, totally outfitted, and then you went and drove it for 120,000 miles without changing the oil, how many people would call you an idiot? And basically what we've done is we have a beautiful city, and we're driving it like it's a high-speed car, and we haven't even looked underneath the hood. So when we've increased the sales tax and we've increased the mill rate to the third highest in the state, we have to stop and say, we have available funds. There's got to be another way to fund this. And going out and floating another bond is the wrong way to do it. Without no ifs, ands, or buts about it, there is no other way that you can do this without a bond. Somebody needs to lose their job. This has been mismanaged to the point of a huge oversight. And this is, somebody needs to be held accountable for this. This is ridiculous. So, I already voted, unfortunately. Unfortunately, I will not be here next week. And I did not vote for the bond. And to be honest, we need to find other ways to spend this money, or to find this money. And we need to find this money. But we have a budget. We need to live within that budget. And we don't need to raise our sales tax. We don't need to float another bond. And for gosh darn it, we do not need to raise our water and sewer rates.
Dick Coos.
Say the question again now, so I don't start off on a different question.
The city has quite a bit of bond debt already. Can we handle more? And on the flip side, can we afford to not fix the water and sewer pipes? Or is it water and waste?
Let me start with the last thing first. We really can't afford not to fix it. And probably the most efficient way is to use those bonds, because the sewer and water accounts are what they call, anyway, they're special. They're set up so that they don't mix with general fund money.
Enterprise funds? Enterprise funds?
That's just one of them, yeah.
Yeah, sewer and water are both that away. Well, yeah. Anyway, and with the state paying 70% of it, it's the Fed. So if you want to take it from your federal taxes, it'll get me going there. But anyway, so that's the answer for that. Yes, we need to do it. And part of why you're seeing the education program is because I was upset because they wouldn't tell us what it's going to cost me as a ratepayer. And I finally got that out of them, and I'm not even too sure it's written on the document or not. But on the document. But the public need to know what it's going to cost them on a per-month basis and in the future. Whether or not we're over-bonded and so forth, I asked the question, I think, about two meetings ago of the finance director. Said, okay, they always give you government guidelines for stuff. Like reserves for general fund is like 10 or 12% of your budget. And we keep arguing to bring that down because some of us think that that's about $3 million that they've got. Is that too much or not enough? We don't want it to go up. And when I asked the question, the finance director says there is no guideline on the amount of bonding. I said, don't give me that. But anyway, there was no answer. Is there a guideline on the total amount of bonding that this community can handle? And apparently it's however much we want to hit the taxpayers for. And I'm not willing to do that. So anyway, we're probably got as much bonding as we want, and everybody feels that way. But we still got projects out there. So how we handle it and how we pay for it is going to be up to the elected body.
Okay. Ed Plute?
Okay, well, the wastewater is just what it is. It's wasting money based on the fact is the city does have quite a few dollars in reserves. Also, they get a lot of money from the bond program, the wastewater project, the wastewater funds. They have a lot of money in there. And, you know, it's at the point where all they're going to do is keep raising your property taxes. You go, well, that'll cover that bond. That'll cover this bond. That'll cover this bond. I think they ought to sit back, and they know every time one of these projects go overboard, like the library and fire station, they go, oh, we just happened to find another $8 million or $5 million. Let them find the money. We've had enough of this. Thank you.
And Amanda Mitchell.
All right. Well, I just, how can you afford to pay back the bond when we can't even afford to pay for what we need to take care of in our own town? And we've gotten to the point, and I know that there's probably many people that are listening, and there's people out there that you know that go and live off of credit cards because they can't afford it. Maybe it's because they need diapers. Maybe it's real necessities. Maybe some people blow it off of, you know, they said, hey, I want a brand new car. But look, see, I'm being offered, well, look, I'm going to get some money if I go spend this. How many credit cards offer you money? It's a carrot, and we're being led along. We are not going to be able to afford it. We are going to head towards bankruptcy if we don't take in care of our finances. And so, no, I am not voting yes for this bond. I wouldn't even encourage it. There has to be some other ways. You know, when I look at our house, we did have to replace all the piping at once because it was bad. But I wouldn't assume that every piping in our system is bad at once. Why can't we take part of it and replace it in sections? Or what about, has anybody actually looked into the price of supplies and how much it actually cost us for the piping? How much are we actually paying for labor? Everybody knows in the town that we're hitting this point that we're past expenditure. There was, and I gave this at the chamber lunch, that in Hawaii they have a community there that all chipped in. They were looking at their roads and ruining their tours industry because their roads were so bad and they couldn't get out there. The town was told it was going to cost over $40 million to replace their road, and it was going to take 2 years to replace it. They were hurting. You know what the community did is they paid for those supplies, and they did it to themselves and got it taken care of a lot faster. What is our town willing to do to come up and step up to the plate? Would anybody be willing to volunteer? Maybe we should ask some of the community and see if they have some other ideas on this. But I have a hard time believing that even with the piping that we have, is this Ketchikan prices? That is this like the Stanford University prices that we're paying for gold? Or what are the actual gist? And that's something I would be looking into too. So the town knows how much they're actually looking at spending on something. But I wouldn't vote for the bond at all. So.
Thank you. And I would like to remind listeners, this is a call-in show. If you have a question for our city council candidates, please call 225-9655. And my next question is, putting aside the water issue, which we've already addressed, what will be your top priority if elected to the Ketchikan City Council? And this time we will start with Dave Kiefer.
I've made it pretty clear from the get-go that I've not been happy as a city resident at the fact that we have, over the past 25, 30 years, truly kicked a lot of projects down the road. Now, the good thing is, in the last few years, they have taken care of the fire station, which was 50 years old, had to be replaced. They have built a new library. They are making steps that way, but we're still getting hit by a variety of emergencies, whether it's bulkheads failing, whether it's bridges and trestles, whether it's, you know, who knows what's out there. And I think now is a really good time, and what would probably be my number one priority at this point, is to sit down with staff and the other council members and see if we can come up with what do we need to fix now? What needs to be done now? What, you know, check everything. Make sure that, you know, we're not being surprised by this failing pipe or this infrastructure that's not there. And then start prioritizing those and get as much stuff done as we can afford as soon as we can. Because the longer we wait to fix this stuff, it's just going to get more and more expensive. And I think, as Amanda said earlier, it's like you've got this town that looks kind of nice on top, but then we're not checking under the hood. Actually, you answered that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that, Kevin. We're not checking under the hood, and I think that there is some truth to that. I think there has been a sense over the last 15, 20 years of, well, you know, if it's not broken now, let's not worry about it. And we have trestles that we are suddenly told need to be replaced, and You say, well, did you check? Well, no one's really been checking for a certain period of time. These are the things we have to do as a community. We have to have a community that basically functions, that doesn't price all of the residents out of it. But I think it's really important now for the council to sort of step back from the rushing to get things done and try to figure out where we need to go from here on out and what we can do.
And Dick Coos?
Yeah, everything's on the table. I mean, whenever you start dealing with the budget and what you do with, so from my viewpoint, the starting point is the budget and the revenues. And you see, you give the staff the direction where you want to go. The budget comes back. You take a look at it, and you start going through it, and you reduce it. And there's things that we will be fixing in the future. It's going to continue to be sewer and water and dealing with roads, because that's the things that function. Electricity is always there. We've got a new plant coming online, and we've got Stipe out there that's doing a good job of providing us really cheap power. And so it, you know, like I say, it's you can try to get into details here right now, but until you look at that budget and you see what's into it, and you look at the past history of the budget and see what things are getting out of hand or things that show up every year but don't really get done, but they still want to keep it on the budget, well, you start trying to whittle at them. And like, once again, reminding all of us, it takes four hands to get rid of it, and sometimes that is a booger. So just take the hole and look at the hole and then gel it back to what you want.
And Kevin Staples?
Thank you. You know, when I sit there in bed late at night and I'm sitting there, things running through my head, and I'm sitting up late at night thinking about these things, and they keep me awake. They really do. There's a lot of things on that I'm, you know, to sit there and say, well, what would you do if you were on city council? Well, one of the first things I'd like to do is term limits. We have people that have made career city council, borough assembly. I mean, borough is actually, they've done a great job with term limits. I think that's an amazing job. But to sit there and we keep hearing people say, well, nobody wants to run. Well, I don't buy that. There's definitely people that want to come into our town and serve and share their ideas and share their passions and help make this town a better place. Another thing is, I want to make this town a place that people actually want to stay. Everybody knows I'm new to town. It's not a secret. I moved here to become a single dad. I gave up sailing the world around just to move to Ketchikan to be a single dad. And it's the best decision I've ever made in my life. It's the best decision that was ever given to me. Now I want to make sure that it was the right decision to make. Ketchikan's an extremely expensive place to live. Everybody knows that. But by making it more and more difficult to live here, by increasing our mill rate and increasing our sales tax, it's making it difficult for anybody to survive here. And we need to have jobs that pay well enough for people to stay here without being taxed to death. And lowering the tax rates, lowering the sales tax, which is probably going to be harder than pulling your own tooth out, and lowering the mill rate, bringing the property values back down to a reasonable level. I mean, these are all things that everybody on the city council should be looking at. We need to get these bonds under control. You can't keep going to people and saying we want more money for this project or this project or this project when you've got your back hand in their back pocket and you're taking money out of their wallet directly. This is a serious issue. And I think one of those ways is term limits. Having fresh people in there to say, whoa, wait a minute, that is not the way to handle my money. I'm a citizen. I'm trying to survive here as well. And I want to be able to continue to survive here. This is my home. You know, this is my commitment. And I've lived in, it's kind of embarrassing, I've lived in, I think, 15 cities between being a military brat and in the military. And this is where I'm calling home. This is where I want to retire. And I want to be able to afford it.
Amanda Mitchell?
Yeah. Well, I guess it's kind of going over what we've talked about tonight. Sorry. I think that managing other people's money is a heavy responsibility. I mean, it's not anything that should be taken lightly, and the budget is one of them. But it's hard to know what the needs are in a budget without actually knowing those in the departments as well and what the needs of each department is. And I think that would be also one of my goals, is actually to get to know what is going on behind the scenes, not on the surface, is researching those. Also, I would want to look into the questions people have asked. Well, hey, how is management? And this is a huge question of people. How is it working? How come we are so far in debt? Why do we keep getting this place? What are the budgets? And so it goes back to management. They're wondering if it's a city council issue or if it's a management. But city council, their job is to look into the matters of municipal. So I guess probably more of micromanaging the city manager and making sure things that are going properly. And then also it's just serving the people of our town and being that voice, because a lot of people felt like they weren't listened to. And that's not just to do with the water issue. Why would people come to me when the city council is there? It's because there's a need. And so I would hope that that would be something that they could do. So.
And Ed Plute?
Well, one of my greatest concerns is I've been studying the city books now for approximately six years in depth. I probably got 3,000 pieces of paper. And, you know, I keep looking at this where it's scattered all over the place, where fingers can fall off here and there. So you got to ask yourself, I'd like to see one general fund micromanaged with honest people. And the other thing is, you know, you look at City Hall, for instance. Back in 2006, they replaced the air conditioning system for $500,000 plus. Well, they did it again in 2014 at $750,000. So then you ask yourself, okay, fourth floor, $350,000 for office petitions. Go take a walk up there and ask yourself, did them office petitions really cost that kind of money? Okay, for cars and equipment that Ketchikan buys, you see these brand new trucks running around all over all the time, every year, brand new this, brand new that, brand new this. Well, run them till the doors fall off, quit buying all this brand new equipment. If you just start micromanaging, you could save the town millions of dollars without raising taxes every time you turn around. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, putting aside the water issue, what do you believe is the biggest mistake that the Ketchikan City Council has made in the last year? And this time we will start with Kevin Staples.
Wow. Well, putting aside the water issue, it was definitely sales tax. There was definitely a different option or different ways about it we could have gone. We could have said a seasonal sales tax where we hit the tourists the hardest. They're going to keep coming back here. We could have hit the tourists and turned it off. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Sitka actually has a seasonal sales tax. We could have turned it off and made it more affordable for us long-term residents to actually stay. To just arbitrarily raise to go from 6% to 6.5% in almost the blink of an eye is an affront. It's an affront to every citizen in the city, and actually on the island, because you can't live on the island without buying your groceries inside the city. So when you raise that the sales tax from 6% to 6.5%, it was a slap in the face, and I mean, that was probably the biggest mistake you could have made. Besides putting ammonia in the water, that was the biggest mistake we could have done.
Dave Kiefer?
I'm trying to think if there was another mistake besides the sales tax in the water, but nothing is coming to mind. I think, even though I now own a business downtown that benefits by the summer tourist trade, I have also seen other communities have seasonal sales taxes. Virtually all of our competing communities do that. And I guess if you're going to raise it, if the money is the real issue, I guess I would like to see that. I would like to have seen that it been raised on a seasonal level as opposed to year round. And I will never sit here and lie to your face by saying that I would never ever raise taxes, but I think that was probably the mistake. I would prefer a seasonal summer sales tax.
Amanda Mitchell.
This is tough. The Citizens Initiative, does that count as water? I think so.
Yes. Okay, it's all connected.
I'm like, oh my goodness. So the taxes is huge. But, you know, one recently that crossed my mind is that I think that city council is having a hard time understanding that they're there to serve the people versus dictate. And I thought about the resolution against Proposition 2. No matter what side of the issue you are on for Proposition 2, it is not the place of the city council to try to sway the vote. That is for us to decide as a community, and that wasn't their place. And so I guess maybe it comes down to, and I'm trying to think of some other little issues besides the water issue, that really comes up that it was about dictating and instead of listening. And so, yeah, thanks.
Thank you. And Ed Plute?
Yeah, you know, when we had that initiative running around town getting the signatures to get rid of this chloramine, well, the city was wise and just said, well, we'll just throw this one in the trash. Well, how embarrassing is that? You know, it sounds more like Nazism almost, because you won't let us vote on something. That's pretty bad. But then again, you look at the sales tax. Okay, you get a new sales tax. The harbor rate went from $33 per head to $50 per head. Look at that giant rate increase. So now you're looking at harbors, ports and harbors, a 21% increase, the highest in the United States in the next 3 years up of 2013, 14, and 15. This, all these things, and they're going to nail us on this water again and saying it's going to cost another $40 million. Well, now we're up to $80 million. I don't think so. So we need to really do some serious research on this. Thank you.
Thank you. And Dick Coos.
It's a tough spot to be in whenever I've been right there. You know, I know that there's a lot of things I've voted no on in that council over the past, I don't know how many years you want to back up, but really thinking as much as anything, and one thing I've always been disappointed in, and that would be, and I think it's probably a mistake, and it's how do we get more public input and involvement in what we do. And it's always been my philosophy that we're going to make a decision, and if the public's upset, they're going to talk to us, and then we need to be willing to change that decision. And sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't. But more often than not, we don't hear from the people. And the people have got, this group of three people here showed up. And I admire them for that. Even though we disagreed upon the results, they showed up. And that's the positive. But we've got, the city council has to figure out a way to not make the mistake of not getting the people to show up. And we ask this all the time. But to me, that's the biggest mistake. You can argue about some decisions over all you want to. I think that the fire hall and the library were overbuilt. One of them in the wrong place, but that's my choice. And I can go on and on about those, but those probably aren't serious mistakes. It's the other ones getting public involvement.
Thank you. And on a more positive note, what's the best decision that the council made in the last year? And this time we will start with Ed Plute. This one might be harder for some of you.
Well, I think a lot of decisions, you know, I went to a lot of meetings, and this is only my opinion because I look at the truth as best I can, but I don't think city council has made a whole lot of wise decisions on a whole lot of areas. I mean, every time we produce something and they say, well, the public isn't doing anything about it. Well, you know, you just had a couple thousand residents barking down in your ear and they still didn't listen to us. So that pretty much sums that up.
Okay, and Kevin Staples.
To be honest, actually, I have to say the going back on the rain gauge, didn't sound like they listened to anybody at all, and then all of a sudden they came out of the woodwork and they listened to what people were saying. And I have to admit, when I first came here in 1992, I was a cadet at the United States Merchant Marine Academy. I was on a tanker, the Sierra Madre. And the first thing I saw was a Ray Troll T-shirt, Spawn Till You Die. And I still have that CCC. I still have that shirt in a sea chest in my attic. Now, what I'm trying to say about that is we have the most amazing artists in Ketchikan, and to farm out the rain gauge to a not even an American artist, I just think was a bad decision. And so when people came and said, "You need to stop this. We're spending way too much money on a rain gauge." Obviously, everybody here knows how much it rains. But for a European artist to design something in Alaska was kind of, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, it was the wrong idea. And we have some of the most amazing artists in all of Alaska here in Ketchikan. And we could definitely do a rain gauge probably cheaper and definitely more heartfelt. And so I think that was a great idea when they said, no, we're gonna take a step back and we're not gonna fund the rain gauge right now. We're gonna pull out on the contract that we've signed with this person. I think that was a great idea.
Dave Kiefer.
Every time the city council meets, or the borough assembly, or the school board, they make dozens of decisions. And 99.9% of those decisions are good, positive things for the community. You know, we're obviously, several of us are obviously running to join the council, so we are probably not going to speak about the positive job that they do because we're trying to convince voters that, you know, I'm better, or you're better, or you're better. The truth is, they do a pretty good job. Will I always find things that I will disagree with? Sure. Will I find things that I, sitting right here, I can't come up with any one specific thing, but I can say that in general, they have made some decisions in the last year that have been good for the community, have been very good for the community. They haven't made all those decisions, and like I said, there are a few that I would disagree with, but I'm not going to sit here and spend a lot of time beating them over the head because it's a hard job. I know more than most what goes into it, and I think their hearts are in the right place. Do they sometimes make mistakes? Yeah. And as Mr. Coos mentioned too, you don't, when you're in local government, you don't get as much feedback as a lot of people think you do. Weeks can go by, you may not hear from a single constituent about anything. Until, of course, you do something, like you get tied up in the rain gauge one, and suddenly you hear from a lot of people. Or the chloramine thing, suddenly you hear. And but in general, you don't hear that much, and you have to be very careful not to get caught up. And I have friends on the assembly who every so often will say things like, well, people are telling me, and I want to say, who's telling you that? Give me some names, because the reality is, we always joke that if 10 people show up at a local government meeting, they can change just whatever the policy is that's being discussed, because that suddenly appears to elected officials as a huge groundswell of support or opposition towards something. I think the council has done a pretty good job, to be totally honest.
Thank you. Dick Coos.
Yeah, probably to repeat, the one thing that I think has been most visible to the public that was positive was what the gentleman there said, the rain gauge. It needed to leave. That's a historic landmark down there, and we need to leave it alone. Maybe put some paint on it and cover up the pipe, and that's where it should have been. That's where it is right now. And that's the most visible, probably, thing that we've done. I think there's other things that are really positive. Has been probably the three-year and maybe one more year period of improving the docks downtown for our visitors, because that is where our income is coming from, especially from the sales tax. It's starting to look really good. It's easy to maintain now, and that's been a positive decision by the council and, with some help from the borough assembly also in some cases.
And Amanda Mitchell.
I have to say, the fishing from the bridge. You guys decided that, yes, we can continue fishing from the bridge. I love that. You know, to see all those people up there. And I don't know how many times at night, even if you walk or something, people are up there still fishing. So I was so relieved. I was so happy. I love seeing that. And I'm sure a lot of tourists love that, too, about Ketchikan. So I thought that was great. And, yes, I know that you guys probably do make a lot of positive decisions that we don't get to see, because it's not one of those negative things. Usually that's what's reported on. It is, right? So it's what draws it. So I'm sure you guys are heroes in smaller ways, and that we just don't note that and we see the negative. So if I'm there, I'm sure I'll see it too firsthand, right?
Thank you. And I would like to remind people that this is a call-in show. If you have a question for the city council candidates, call 225-9655. And my next question is, can the city promote economic development? And if so, how? And this time we will start with Amanda Mitchell.
You know, that's a it's a big one because I think right now we're still that we're still in the position where we think that we need to take out bonds to make money, and nobody ever makes money off of credit cards. I just want to point this out in the long run. But I do think that there are some things that we're strengthening. One of the we talked about the museum, or maybe we didn't. I'm sorry. Okay, we haven't talked about the museum. It was brought up as ideas, and we keep thinking we need the state of an art this and the state of art that. When we talk about all the wonderful artists that we have here in our town, if we could actually pool our resources and make that museum our own instead of somebody else's thing, we can maybe even draw more tourists in here. I just think that we need to think outside of the box and maybe getting a fresh perspective on how we can draw them in. And I'm sure that I was listening. We went out a couple weeks ago and people were bringing up ideas. So like Gravina, could we haul trash over there? Could we put it up there? Some people in our community actually have some really, really good ideas, and maybe they've been brought forth on the table. But I think maybe even picking the brains of our community and saying, hey, how would you guys like to see the economy grow? And that's how we involve, you know, like one of the things you said is getting our community involved means posing those questions to them instead of saying, well, do you want to do this or this? I mean, that's what I do with my toddler, you know, would you like a red shirt or a green shirt? And then when people get older, they make bigger decisions, right? So I think drawing those the community in and asking them, what are your ideas? How do you think we can strengthen our community economically? Ed Plute?
Okay, here we go. Well, you have an development fund that has money in it, but you got mines that are going to be moving in, which will definitely raise some questions up with a lot of issues and people. The City Museum, I believe there was money upwards of $8 million voted on back in 2007 or somewhere in there. So that money should be drawing interest, and that should go up to about $10 million by now, I think, at 4% interest rates or somewhere around there. I'm not sure the exact numbers, but it's something like that. I also tried to get a boat museum going here in 2006 because, you know, part of our history in Ketchikan is the fishing industry, and it would be nice to have a boat museum, but not run by the city, run by private people. And these people would have their beautiful boats, and the captains would show their boats. And just a wonderful experience for the tourists. And it would be a development fund monies that they could bring in more. And these are just many ideas that they need to be looked at. But this mining industry that everybody's talking about, which they're going to make a road around Gravina and different places, they already have plans for that. So it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when and time. So we're going to have to be ready for that, so that'll be somewhat of a fairly good boom if that does happen. Thank you.
Thank you. And Dave Kiefer.
One of the challenges the city has whenever they approach the issue of economic development is it's a borough-wide power, and that's the challenge. And as we all know, the city and the borough don't always – well, if you give the city and the borough the choice between the red and the yellow shirt, it doesn't work out for them. Anyway, and so that's always been a challenge. Now, obviously, the city currently has control over the largest economic development engine in town, which is the ports. You know, and they've done a pretty good job of expanding that to meet the need. Of course, the fear there is eventually, you know, how much do you keep expanding? How much is how much does that particular industry expand before it becomes somewhat unmanageable? I think there are ways. One of the things that I've always wanted to do, and the reason why I'm running for the city, is when you're involved with borough government, you can kind of do everything, and it's all on the table. Everything is all there. Whereas the city has always kind of focused this, well, you know, our boundaries are from, you know, this point to this point, and we don't care what happens outside that. And I would like to see the city and the borough work together more on an area-wide economic development strategy or plans. So it's not just the borough throwing money at the wall. The city can be involved in that as well. And also, I guess what I would approach how I would approach that is the city needs to look a little bit beyond their own boundaries when making decisions. You know, what is good for the community at large, not just what is good for shoreline to, you know, the Coast Guard base. And probably the biggest frustration I've had with the city over the last 15 years or so has been that sense of, you know, this is it, and we're not going to do anything that doesn't directly benefit us 100%. And so I would hope that in terms of developing economic, in terms of approaching economic development, the city would look at the borough wide, the area wide issues.
Thank you. And Dick Coos?
Yeah, economic development, like Dave said, the power is there, but government policies and regulations control business. And the city, I won't throw the borough into it, we need to constantly be reviewing our policies and our regulations and see how they affect business. And I'll guarantee you they do, and I can sit here and give you a half a dozen stories of our loss of business in the past year, especially within the city limits, of people going outside because we don't know how to deal with them. We won't give them the benefit of a doubt, if that's the way to put it. And so, once again, it's constantly doing that, constantly reminding, I'll say, employees that you are a public servant. You're not God. They're telling that guy what he can do and he can't do. You need to work with them. And you end up with the same result, and you end up with more business in town. And the same thing goes clear across the board. And the other one with that is the two governments working together. Together, they can make it work.
Thank you. And Kevin Staples.
I'm sorry. Can you just repeat the question, please? We've had so many great answers. I'm just kind of off in left field right now.
Can the city promote economic development? And if so, how?
Well, of course, the city is pretty much the end-all, be-all of promoting economic development. One of the ways we can do that is, you know, by having a high sales tax, the workers can't stay here. So to keep asking for economic development, and then you don't make it an incubator for that development, it's kind of you're fighting yourself. And so the city council, the decisions that we make or that they make, whoever's on the city council, are directly responsible for the development of our economy. And so, you know, whether it's new jobs at the shipyard or the tourist industry, all of these things are, the decisions that the city council makes are going to make those people that want to stay here and bring jobs here and to help develop our economy.
Okay, thank you. And we do have about half an hour left. And as listeners may have noticed, it takes a little bit of time for all five to answer a question. So if you do have a question for a city council candidate, now's the time to call 225-9655. And my next question for you all is, do you support continuing with the Ketchikan Medical Center expansion project? And this time we will start with Dave Kiefer.
Yes. But I need to explain that a little bit.
Expand.
I need to expand on that. When you talk about economic development and the future of our community, having the predominant medical facility in the region in a lot of ways ensures our future survival, and not just on an individual basis. It ensures our survival as a community. And that's another case where, once again, we've kicked things way down the road, and now we're paying 40, 50, 60, up to $80 million, depending on how far you want to go with the project, to actually finish it. And once again, we were at one point, even been out there, we were dealing with a hospital where the facilities looked like something out of Marcus Welby or Dr. Kildare, because we waited 50 years to finally make the improvements we needed to make.
It was very retro,
yeah. see, speaking about economic development, we should have had Hollywood come up here and film like their old, any of their retro, you know, shows, because all of that facility was incredibly old. That said, the council's going to have to decide how far it wants to go, because the last bond basically gets us two-thirds of the way there, and we probably cannot count on additional state funding. We need to figure out how we're going to do that, and we may have to make some decisions there. I mean, obviously you say, well, to have this facility the exact way we want, it's going to cost X. Well, as a community, I'm not convinced we can afford the exact way we want it. Hopefully, the $50 million renovation they're doing now is going to bring us a lot closer to where we need to be. And I certainly support the hospital. It is, I believe, as of right now, the largest employer in town. So We need, as the council will have to decide, you know, what's the next step? You know, where does it want to go? Where does it want to go? And what's it going to do?
Thank you. And Kevin Staples?
Thank you. Actually, you know, when the vote first came out, I was very against the expansion of the hospital and the renovations. And once again, I felt as though at the time that it was we were putting more money into things, and why can't Peace Health actually help pay for this? They own it. They're paying us dimes on the dollar for rent, and why don't they put something up towards this? And in that time, it's actually been over a year now. I'm starting to see more and more benefits for that, and one of the benefits is bringing in jobs that are going to stay here. I mean, let's face it. I keep harping on this, and I know it's kind of a dead horse, but I'm going to kick it one more time. We can't afford to stay here, and so by making jobs that people want, making the hospital a great facility that doctors and nurses and healthcare providers are going to want to come and stay and work and continue to work and raise their families here is really it's a win-win for everybody. It's a win for our community. And even if Peace Health is only paying dimes on the dollar for the rent, it benefits all of us. It really does.
And Dick Hoos.
Yes, we need to continue with that effort there. A couple of points is that from what we're being told by staff, the value engineering going on right now with the contractors, we're gaining dollars, big dollars, that will go toward that next phase. And I think if the city and the borough jointly continue our effort working with the state, I would differ with Dave. I think we will get some more money from the state. It may not be all of it, but it'll be at least ways a part of it. And so between the two of them, hopefully we can finish it off. But it's a very important thing economic development-wise, because the medical profession likes Ketchikan. It's a great place to live, even though it is expensive. But it is a good place to live and raise a family. And so, yeah, we need to continue.
And Ed Plute?
Okay, the hospital's been one of my pet peeves based on the fact is Peace Health has been making billions of dollars, and they should put up their own share. And second of all, it is $74 million that we're going to give to Peace Health. And by the time all of Phase 1, Phase 2, and Phase 3 is done, it's going to be another $176 million. So the total so far since the year 2000, you start adding up all the machinery and all the equipment that we gave them as a nonprofit, is over $300 million. So I got a good question. You could build the best Taj Mahal in the world. You're not going to get any better services than when you got. And that's the bottom line. So if that's the case and we're paying that kind of money, then we should have free health insurance, because that's over $38,000 per residence, just that $74 million, somewhere in that number. But anyway, so we should have free insurance in that case. But like I said, you can build the best Taj Mahal in the world. You're not going to get any better services or better doctors. That's not how that works. Thank you.
And Amanda Mitchell.
Okay. I just want to point out that I may not have every single side of this subject, but as it is now, I would say no. And this is just how many of us have played Monopoly, and we know how the game goes. We are setting up a city-sponsored Monopoly with medical. If we agree that we need to increase our economy, how much are we paying to put those jobs? Is it really a job, or is it taking money out of everybody's pocket to say we have a job? I mean, so we also say that KPU, owning KPU, we've had people brought up, well, we should go private with it because we're not making money. Then what are we doing investing our town money? And this is our money that we're paying for and putting it into the hospital. And when, again, it goes back to the water issue in a sense, but people started contacting me about other subjects. One of them was excessive medical debt in our town. And for our hospital, it's not cheap. You know how many people actually fly out of our town to get medical, or they save up, their families save up, and so they all can go be seen out of town? This is not helping us any. It's hurting us. And it's not giving a variety. And this is not the only town that this is happening. When you start getting it and you build up the hospital where they are the only place you can go, you're not going to get to have that comparison where we can go shop for a cheaper service. And so I think it's hurting our town very, very much. So,
thank you. And I believe we have someone on the line. It is Greg. Greg, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead with your question, Greg.
Well, it's a question and a comment at the same time. I heard earlier you were talking about, like, people volunteering to help do city work and things like that. Oh, I imagine if you look at KCC, you could probably get some volunteers, you know, offer them a minimum wage, which could be applicable to their fines, and, you know, leave them a little bit for their commissary. But they'd get out and be able to do something, and, you know, physical labor, and then go back and be, you know, tired and go sleep. I think, it, you know, it would help them, and then they might learn a job skill in the process, you know, to help them keep their little bones out of jail.
Thank you.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Greg. And for those who might not be aware, KCC is Ketchikan Correctional Center, and that would be the jail here in town. And this time we will start with Dick Coos.
Yeah, from the standpoint of utilizing those folks up there for some city labor, I don't know whether we're in a program with that doing it right now. I know there are nonprofits in town, such as I know with the Lions Club, we will take some of those folks. People get referred to us, and they go out and do some things that are community service that saves us money. So if it's not a program that's ongoing, I think it's a good idea to utilize those types of folks. And in my past life, I've utilized those types of camps. And it gets a lot of good work done.
And Dave Kiefer, is this a conflict of interest? Can you answer this?
It almost is. I'm not going to talk. I work at KCC. I work in the jail. So I am not going to answer any question about what the inmates should or should do. I think the whole idea of volunteerism is a really interesting idea. I've worked for nonprofits, you know, prior to this for most of my life, adult life in large portions, and it's all well and good to say, well, if we had cheap labor, we could do X, Y, or Z. But there are invariably a lot of liability issues. There are a lot of other things that tend to leap in. You know, the minute you go, hey, let's all get together and do this, the attorneys get involved, and suddenly you can't. Particularly with like large capital projects, you know, yeah, you can fix a road, you can fix some things, but beyond that, you know, I'm not sure I want a whole bunch of volunteers putting in my sewers, just to say. What was his actual question, though?
It was more of a comment than a question. So,
I think I'm done.
Okay, and Kevin Staples.
Well, having spent most of my formative years in the South, I say let's bring back the chain gang.
Oh yeah.
But I don't really know what the law is in Alaska on using inmate labor. Honestly, I don't. So, but it would have to be looked at. You know, is it something that's even feasible? Paying them a fair wage and teaching them a trade is excellent. I really do. But I just don't know the legalities of it. But I'm all for it, that's for sure.
Thank you. And Amanda Mitchell.
Oh, there's a lot of comments. I think it's a wonderful idea. I love ideas. And, you know, I was thinking, well, along that, you could do like the Construction Academy. You could talk to UAS. And this, it just opens up a huge variety of other things we can look into. But as Dave said, there are regulations. When we were doing a homeschool project looking into the homelessness issue in town and around, and one of the things that we did was contact Habitat for Humanity. It is so hard to have kids under 18 work because of the regulations. And it actually got to the point because I was like, well, could we do it here in town? That was one of the questions. It's something we can outreach. It becomes such a pain. There's so much more paperwork involved at a certain point than you can actually get done. And a lot of people don't get help. Could we do something as a town, as a city council regulation to find out and investigate this? I think it's worth it. I mean, that really is definitely one. But, and then the other comment I would say is just because of research and talking with people, there's a thing called school-to-prison pipeline, and people know about it. So would this encourage something in our town where we put it? Because we have work that we need to do, we don't want to spend, would we start putting people in there? So I think that there's pros and cons that we'd have to look into it, but I would definitely, this would be something I would look into.
And Ed Plute.
Well, due to the fact is I was actually on a kind of a chain gang when I was a young man. I wasn't exactly a perfect soul when I was a kid. I wrote some bad checks, stole a couple of cars when I was a young man, but They made me an option if I wanted to go to work or if I wanted to stay in jail. And they did pay a little bit. I think it was 15 cents a day back then. But basically what I find, if you put in low-level offenders, you know, nonviolent criminals and non-drug addicts, et cetera, the liability would then at that point be shifted down and be cheaper as far as the liability part of it goes. But, however, it gives these people an aspect of realizing they're starting to save money because they'll get that money when they get out of jail. So they won't have to go rob somebody or do something crooked when they get out. They actually got some money that they can actually go rent an apartment or get a motel or get something or go with their family, buy a car, and get restarted again. Because a lot of these people, they get out of jail, their first choice is, well, there's nothing else. I ain't got nothing else. Let's go do some drugs or something. Well, at least this time they got some money in their pocket and they go, hey, you know what? Maybe I got a chance. You know, and these need to be addressed. But I don't think there's any good counseling in these jails anymore. You know, they need people in there to teach these people responsibility and ideas of how to do things. And you don't see this anymore. You don't see kind, caring people also going, how can I help these people? Because they go right back down the streets, get drunk, get thrown right back in jail. I've seen this 100 times. We got to have something out there that can help people, but I don't think it should be up to the city to do this. This should be up to private individuals or some groups out there that takes responsibility for this, not the city's problem. Thank you.
So what'd you do on the chain gang?
Oh, that was a bunch of fun.
What sort of work was it? Just
it was very, very hard work. They put a big swing in your hand, and you went out and chopped trees in the wintertime and did road work, and you put your full 8 hours a day in for 15 cents a day.
Oh.
And so, you know, you got out of jail with a little bit of money, but that 15 cents bought me something back in the day.
Thanks. Sorry, we got off on a tangent. It's your expertise there.
Right? Yes, it is.
All right, back to the issues. Wrangell and Petersburg just voted to hand management of the Tai Lake Hydroelectric Facility over to the Southeast Alaska Power Agency. Should Ketchikan look into doing the same thing with Swan Lake? And this time we'll start with Kevin Staples.
Could you repeat the question again? That was pretty long. I'm following it all.
Wrangell and Petersburg just voted to hand management of the Tai Lake Hydroelectric Facility over to the Southeast Alaska Power Agency. Should Ketchikan look into doing the same thing with Swan Lake? They own it. We manage it. We run it.
Right. You know, there's been a number of things that have been mismanaged in our town. I don't really want to get into, well, this is why we're here, actually. But when we look at our power bill and we see the diesel surcharge, and I understand that they're spreading it out over a year and it's supposed to look a lot nicer, but I'm sorry, $5 over 12 months is the same as $60 at one shot. It still hits your pocketbook the same way. There's some definite mismanagement that's been taking place on the entire Swan Lake. And maybe it is time to turn it over to somebody else that can handle it. And with that, we could actually, the person or people that are actually managing that could have that that responsibility taken away from them where they could focus on better things that would actually help our city a lot better.
Thank you. And Dave Kiefer.
One thing I've noticed over the years of living in Ketchikan is we're really good at saying, wow, you know, this is terrible. It's all. But then the minute we talk about actually handing over the authority to someone else, we balk. Probably the best analogy I can come up with about the Swan Lake SEPA issue is kind of similar to what the borough is going through with the airport. We don't own it. We're the only community that runs it for the state. We have been fighting with the state off and on now for 15 or 20 years to make sure the state is paying their fair share to support the facility so that we don't lose our shirts, because running that airport is not cheap. No matter how much people complain about what we charge for, you know, ferry fees or whatever, we do not make back remotely as much as it costs. And every so often the borough gets to the point where they say, let's just give it back. Here's the key. You guys take it. You run it. Whatever. And then every time we do that, we get this groundswell, you know, three or four people or 10 show up at the podium and say, no, if the state runs it, we won't have any say. They'll start shutting it down at 2 in the afternoon, or no jets will come in, or blah, blah, blah. You hear all that. And I suspect in some ways there's kind of a similar reaction. And we've this, you know, Dick could probably go on at length about the history, certainly of the Four Dam Pool and Swan Lake and the whole thing. It just... There's always a certain part in Ketchikan, people who say, we want that in our hands. We want to call the shots, even though it's someone else owns it. We want to manage it. We want to make sure it runs the way we want it to run. And I suspect, although there would also be similar people saying, no, we should just, you know, wash our hands of it and make them operate it. The minute we do that and the price rises, who's going to be the first people screaming? We are. So, I don't know.
So you're saying we have control issues?
We do have control issues, and the minute someone else raises a price on us, we're just going to be screaming like bloody murder.
Thank you. And Amanda Mitchell.
You know, I was going to say that I don't think I have nearly enough idea of what's going on behind the ground, you know, behind the scenes, and some of the stuff they've already looked at, but it is a control issue. I mean, as soon as we hand it over, we think the state, how many get so frustrated? Think about when they were trying to shut down Ward Lake for federal. I mean, look, we will lose control and we don't like it. And that's where it comes down to is it really worth it? Is it worth handing it over? So I think that we should look at that. What could happen if we hand it over, and would we be willing to suffer with the consequences? And I would need to do more research and actually go around and talk with more people in the town and find out what their opinion is, because there are people that do have opinions about this, even if and stay in up on it. So anyway, that's all I have to say on it.
And Ed Plute.
Well, if you look at what's actually happening, if you hand this over to SEPA, well, it's like, kind of like giving keys to a drunk driver. You know what's going to happen in the long run. And if you look at the board of directors and who's on SEPA and which way the wheel was turning when they invited that to happen, and you got to ask yourself the question, do you want to hand it over or do you want to just say keep it as usual? Well, personally, SEPA is going to get, I think it's 6% 6 cents on a kilowatt hour if we fire up Big Yogi. Big Yogi is the biggest generator that we built on that site. And Bubba, the small Bubba, or whatever they call it, other one, is this Bubba, yeah, is a smaller generator. But the big generator is going to be producing 9.3 cents per kilowatt hour, but SEPA is going to get 6% of that, 6 cents out of that. So it doesn't smell good down the line on this one either. And I read this in an article in the City Works there, so thank you.
Thank you. And Dick Coos.
There isn't enough time. Can I refrain from answering on the fact that I've been on the SEPA board 3 different times?
I think that gives you expertise.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, what it need? The question was, should we consider it? And I do believe we need to consider it. It's not saying it'll happen or not. There are pros, there are cons. Like Dave said, I think right now the city has possessionary interest in it. How you give it up, it's there. It's mine. I got it in my hand, so I'm not going to get rid of it, even though it probably makes sense. And there has been one study that was not effectively done and presented to the city council. All 3 cities backed off on it at the time, and the other 2 have finally come around and said, hey, why do we want this headache? Because we still got members on the board. The city of Wrangell, Petersburg, and Ketchikan, they're the board members of SEPA. And so they're going to protect each community's interest on the rate that's paid. And so it just needs to be looked at, and then a decision made in a rational manner.
Okay, and we do have a caller on the line. It is John. John, are you there? John, are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. So go ahead with your question.
Yeah, I just wanted to know to the candidates if they prefer private or public utilities and their thoughts on that. The pros and cons, excuse me.
Private or public utilities and the pros and cons. And we will start with Ed Plute.
Okay, first of all, the city is so involved right now if you handed it over to a public utility system or a public forum, it's probably going to be a disaster, and it'll end up costing more in the long run based on the fact, if you look right now at what it would change to do that, it would be a kind of a scary thought because, you know, what do we sell it for? Okay, they talked about that before. It was $31 million for one of the plants. Okay, well, where's that money go if we sell it? Does it go back somewhere, or does it go to pay off our bonds? And these are pretty interesting questions, but I am not in favor of privatizing at this time.
Thank you. And Kevin Staples.
Thank you. Well, of all the negatives I've had to say today about KPU, I have to say that keeping it in the city's hands is probably, in the long run, definitely going to be better. By going public, any utility rates that are going to be increased are definitely going to have to go before the state of Alaska to be approved. And so there's a little bit more oversight. There's accountability, a lot more accountability. With right now, there's a lot of times that rates are increased, fees are levied that we don't understand, and we're not given a lot of insight into that. But that being said, I believe our utility rates are actually some of the lower in the state, and that's, a lot of that has to do with because it's private. I don't like some of the decisions that are being made. Oh, I'm sorry, because it's public. I'm sorry. Thank you. Because it's public, but a lot of the decisions that are made, we don't understand and we're not told about. And in many regards, a lot of the decisions are made and we have no say in the matter. The chloramine issue would have had to definitely have gone before the state, and it would have been a lot more oversight in that matter. But in my heart, I believe keeping it in our hands is definitely the way to go. That's a total politician answer right there. Can I skirt around that anymore?
And Dave Kiefer.
I think, and as a nearly lifelong Ketchikan resident, what's a private utility? I have no clue. We have all been frustrated at KPU over the years for a variety of things. We just, and part of that is you always bash your local thing anyway, just because you're so frustrated about it. But the reality is, I've also lived in other places where you had private utilities, and the only thing they actually answered to was whatever the rate commission was in that particular state. Right. And I'm not sure there's ever been a rate commission anywhere that saw a rate increase they didn't like. You know, you see it up north all the time with the Alaska Public Utilities Commission, I believe it is. You know, they'll ask for a 25% increase in the MATSU, and oh, it does. It seems to be approved as a matter of course. Here you have two steps. Basically, and the biggest part of it, what you have is, you know, you can go to these city council members, hopefully some of us, and say, look, I don't, you know, you're talking about raising rates. I'm opposed to that. Now, whether they always listen to you, who knows? But you've got that direct connection, and you're never going to have that connection when you're making pleadings to the Alaska Public Utilities Commission or any of those things. They'll you know, your input is not important. And as long as KPU stays publicly owned in Ketchikan, I think that's, you will always have that input. The challenge is, as Mr. Kuss alluded to earlier, is, you know, not all the various parts of KPU make money. And at a certain point, if you find that they're all losing money and you're going under because of it, then you have to seriously think, okay, what's the best interest of the community long term? Well, fortunately, we're not quite at that stage yet.
And Dick Kuss?
Yeah, we need to keep KPU as a public. We need to keep KPU as a public utility, even though there may be some inefficiencies, which we as council members try to ferret out and deal with. The employees are good employees. It's operated pretty efficiently, and the rates, except for probably water, have remained relatively stable. There may be something that happens because when Whitman comes online, but that bond starts being paid. But other than that, our electric rates are really envious of the state. And so, we need to keep it as a public utility.
And Amanda Mitchell.
I believe that public, keeping it as a public utility, I still would think I'm willing to listen to both sides, because there are actually somebody came up to me and was bringing up why we should make it privatized. Maybe it goes back to our control issues that we have here, but it does. Like with the water issue, and we talk about the chlor mine, if that was privatized, you have no choice. You can't speak in front of a council. You can't do anything. They can do whatever they want. And whether there's some issue that comes along with electricity or whatever, we're giving that up, and we're giving up our voice. I mean, that's even some of the concerns with if we were to go and stop managing with the airport or anything. And so I would still say keeping it publicized. Or public. So, thank you.
Thank you. And we are very close to the 9 o'clock hour, so we're just going to jump into closing statements for everybody. And we will start with Amanda Mitchell.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I didn't even think about a closing statement and what I was going to say. Well, I really don't know what to say. I'm like, I feel like I've already said it all. You know, I want to represent. And the reason why I came up with this is because I saw a need. And I want to try to help it and bring some new ideas to the council if elected. And I also want to delve into those issues and get to know more what's going on into the different departments and see the concerns that people have. Sometimes in administration, they have no clue what's going down below her. And you just know that it's that they don't know. You might put in a requisition for a part, and by the time it hits up above, it's, you know, it's not exactly what you needed, or you're going to find you can't use it into that certain part. It's just, I think that's the same thing with city council, and I think that I want to be able to listen and be that ear to actually hear what's going down on the ground level, I guess. And I guess that's all I have to say.
Thank you. And Ed Plute.
Okay. Well, a lot of people out there that know me, or some that don't know me, know I'm pretty controversial about writing letters and complaining. I've been a thorn in the city's side for a long time. I know that. Well, this time I'm going to be really a good thorn in their side, because this time I'll try to get in the best I can, and I will do my job as I was hired to do as a person. And this needs to be done. This budget needs to be addressed, and all of these issues about micromanagement and take a good look at these books needs to get done. And we need to start balancing these budgets out and start down paying our monies, and it's very important. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Dave Kiefer.
18%, 21%, 24%. The highest in the last about 6 years has been, eight years now, has been 24% turnout. And what do I always hear? People say, well, I'm not going to vote because, well, it's always the same people. It's the same blah, blah. Well, in this case, you've actually got a choice. You have six individuals running for three seats. You don't have the excuse that, well, I'm just voting for the same old people all the time. Now, you can still vote for the same old people, but that's okay too. But what really I'm tempted to say vote for me, but I just want you to vote. And that's all you can hear me. Just get, you know, prove me wrong. Let's get up to 30%. Let's get 32%, 30, which is still an embarrassingly low number when you consider it. But we, you know, if you really have a problem with how Ketchikan is run or any of those issues, get out and vote. Be one of the 30% who shows up and makes the decisions. Because, you know, I personally have gotten tired over the years of people saying, oh, yeah, I forgot to vote. You forgot to vote? You forgot to be, no, just do it.
And Dick Coos.
Yeah, I think that the folks, if they want to vote for me again, I believe you will. I've held myself accountable. I've held the council accountable in the city for what they do. I've nitpicked the budget for them. And they love me for it. And it's a big deal to be on the city council, because it's not one issue oriented. There's all kinds of departments here, all kinds of things going on that keeps the city healthy and trying to create jobs, keeps the infrastructure going, and look at that as your voting, and we'll see you at the polls on the 7th.
And Kevin Staples.
Well, personally, I believe that public service and serving the greater good is one of the best things that you could actually do as a human being, as a citizen. I served in the Navy. I want to serve the city of Ketchikan. And I believe public service is something that every American citizen should step up to the plate and do in some form or other, whether they can lead on city council, whether they can serve their country in the military. At the end of the day, you have to say, what have I done to help better ourselves? With that being said, once you've done all that you can do, you need to take a step back and let somebody else serve. And so by recycling the same people over and over and over and over again, we've pretty much heard everything that they've had to say. And it's time we brought in some fresh blood. We need to bring in some fresh ideas, because obviously the ideas in the past I don't think are working. We're too far in debt, and it's way too expensive to raise a family here. And I would really like to raise my family here for the long haul. I've got at least 7 more years of raising my daughter before she moves on, and I'd like to retire here myself, and I'd like to be able to afford that. And I'd like to be voted on the city council so that I can help make that possible for everybody.
Okay, thank you. And that wraps up this evening's candidate call-in forum on KRBD. I've been your host, Layla Carey. Thanks to the listeners who called in and to our candidates, Amanda Mitchell, Ed Plute, Dick Coos, Dave Kiefer, and Kevin Staples, for participating in today's show. Remember to vote. The municipal election is next Tuesday, October 7th.